Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 16, King Chitraketu meets the Lord. Shiti Adibi Esha Kilavrita. There she is. Kila Avrita Shaptavi Dasaguna Uttarai. Andakosha Yatra Patati Anukalpa Zahanda Koti Kotivis Tad Antaha Ananta Shityadivi Esha Kilavritaha Saptavir Dashaguna Guno Tarayar Andako Shaha Yatrapatat Yanu Kapaha Sahanda Koti Koti Vistat Anantaha. Shiti Adibi. By the ingredients of the material world, headed by earth, Esha, this, Kila, indeed, Avrita, covered, Shaptibi, Jai Shishi Radha Gopina Kijai. Seven. Dashaguna Uttarai, each 10 times more than the previous one.
Each 10 times more than the previous one.
Anandakoshaha,
egg-shaped universe.
Yatra, in whom? Patati, falls. Anukalpaha, like a minute atom. Saha, with. Andakoti koti bi. Millions of such universes. Tat, therefore. Antaha, you are called unlimited. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Every universe is covered by seven layers: earth, water, fire, air, sky, the total energy and false ego, each 10 times greater than the previous one. There are innumerable universes besides this one, and although they are unlimitedly large, they move about like atoms in you. Therefore, you are called unlimited, ananta, purport. The Brahma Samhita 5.48 says, Yas yaika nishvisata kala atavalambhya divanti loma vilaja jagarantanata vishnur mahansa iha yasya kala vishesho govindamari purushang tamahang bhajami. The origin of the material creation is Mahavishnu, who lies in the causal ocean. While he sleeps in that ocean, millions of universes are generated as he exhales, and they are all annihilated when he inhales. This Mahavishnu is the plenary portion of Vishnu, Govinda, yasya kala vishesha. The word kala refers to a plenary portion of a plenary portion. From Krishna or Govinda comes Balaram. From Balaram comes Sankarshan. From Sankarshan, Narayan. From Narayan, the second Sankarshan. From the second Sankarshan, Mahavishnu. From Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu. And from Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, Shirodakshayi Vishnu. Shirodakshayi Vishnu controls every universe. This gives an idea of the meaning of Ananta, unlimited. What is to be said of the unlimited potency and existence of the Lord? This verse describes the coverings of the universe. Saptibhi dasha gunottarai andhakoshaha. The first covering is earth, the second is water, the third is fire, the fourth is air, the fifth is sky, the sixth is the total material energy, and the seventh is the false ego. Beginning with the covering of earth, each covering is 10 times greater than the previous one. Thus, we can only imagine how great each universe is, and there are many millions of universes. As confirmed by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita, 10:42, Ataiva bahunai tena, kim gat tena tu arjuna, vishtavyaham idam kritsnam ekashena, stito jagat. But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. The entire material world manifests only 1/4 of the Supreme Lord's energy, therefore he is called Ananta. Shityadibir esha kilavritaha saptibir dasha gunottarar andakoshaha yatrapatan dhyanukalpaha sahanda koti kotivis tarantaha. Every universe is covered by 7 layers, earth, water, fire, air, sky, the total energy and false ego, each 10 times greater than the previous one. There are innumerable universes besides this one, and although they are unlimitedly large, they move about like atoms in you. Therefore you are called unlimited, Ananta. Nama Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswatim Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvisesa Shunyavadi Paskatya De Sitarane. One day in the 1960s, Srila Prabhupada was talking to one temple president in Los Angeles, and he was describing to him about the material universe. He said that in the spiritual sky, there is one planet called Krishna Loka, which is in the form of a lotus flower. And the planet is so huge that unlimited Vaikuntha planets, there are unlimited Vaikuntha planets, and all of them can fit into Goloka Vrindavan. And besides Goloka Vrindavan, there are unlimited Vaikuntha planets, each one of them greater than the size of the entire cosmic manifestation. And in one small portion of that spiritual sky, there's one little cloud called the material universe, just a little speck in the spiritual sky. Hardly anyone notices it. And in that cloud, Mahavishnu, Karanadakashayi Vishnu, lies down, and from his pores of his body come unlimited universes, more universes than the grains of sand on the beach or the star. So in each universe he enters as Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, and he lies down, and from his navel comes Lord Brahma, who manifests unlimited planets. And in the smallest of all those universes, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu is there, manifesting Lord Brahma, who manifests unlimited planets. And of all those planets, there's one little speck called the Earth planet, just like a speck of dust in the air. It's floating. And on that Earth planet, there are so many continents. And out of one of those continents is North America. And in North America, there was one country called United States, and there were so many states. One of them is called California. And in California, there are so many cities, and one of them is Los Angeles. There are so many parts of Los Angeles. One of them is called La Cienega Boulevard. And in those so many, there are so many houses. And in one house, there's a temple. And in that temple, there was one temple president, and he's thinking he's controlling everything. So even Lord Brahma, he fell into some difficulty one day, or some perplexity. He went to visit Krishna when he was on this planet in Dwarka, and he knocked on the door, and the doorkeeper came and said, "Yes, who is it?" And he said, "Don't you recognize me? You have not seen any pictures of me before? I'm famous. Here, check it out. I have four heads, one, two, three, four. You've seen other people have come like that?" He said, "Well, I'll go and tell Krishna you're here." So he came back and he said, "Before you can come in, Krishna just wanted to know which Brahma you are." So he said, "It's me. Think hard." "It's me, four-headed Brahma, the father of the four Kumaras." So Lord Brahma came. He said, "All right, you can come in." Krishna says, "It's all right." So he came in. And after some discussion, he had a few questions to ask Krishna. So he said, "My dear Krishna, I have some doubt." He said, "Before I came in here, you were asking which Brahma it is. So are there other Brahmas also?" So Krishna laughed, and then he called from all the universes all the Brahmas who came. And some of the Brahmas had 10 heads, some of them had 100 heads, some of them had 1,000 heads, some 1,000,000 heads, then some 10,000,000 heads. And they were proportionally tall or big according to how many heads they had. So Lord Brahma, he was like a little mosquito seeing all these big Brahmas, and they were all, then all the Shivas came with all their heads, all the Indras came, and they're all paying obeisances to Lord Krishna with the resounding sound of their helmets crashing on the floor. So Lord Brahma felt himself very insignificant, and he became humbled. So what to speak of Brahma, we are thinking ourselves very important. Therefore in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Nirmana moha jita sanga dosha adhyatma nitya vinivritta kama dvandvai vimukta sukaduka sangar gachant nyamuda padam avyam tat." So, nirmana, mana means the mind. And nirmana means more or less to negate the mind. So what is the material mind? The material mind says, you are very important. Your body is more or less the most important thing that exists. And everything has value in proportion to how much serves your body or your subtle mind. So the mind is constantly trying to convince the spirit soul of how important he is. And if someone agrees that you are very important, because that's how you get things done in the material world, you encourage people to think that actually you are their devotee. I am surrendered to you. I am your humble servant. Just like when, I remember one time, it's on the video also, one lady reporter was arguing with Srila Prabhupada about women's liberation. And Prabhupada was saying, "But women are naturally subservient to men." And she said, no, there's so many important ladies. There are doctors who are ladies. But Prabhupada was saying that you're presenting yourself as servant. "I am your servant. Please take me. I'll become your servant." This is how you present yourself to men. So then the lady said, "But there are so many women live longer than men, somehow or another." And Prabhupada said, "Well, my grandmother, she lived for 80 years, but my grandfather, he also lived a long time." So Prabhupada was trying to explain to her or at least. But the basic principle is that in the material world, everyone is presenting themselves as being servant, but actually everyone is trying to become master. Presenting oneself as servant in the material world is more or less a tactic to become the master. But the fact is that although we may imagine ourselves to be very important due to the identifying ourselves with this mind, with the illusions of the mind, because nirmana, moha, this pride, due to thinking ourselves very great, is caused by illusion. The basic illusion is that we think ourselves this body. But of course, if we realize that I'm not this body, then I wouldn't have anything to be illusioned about. Because the only reason I have any pride in this material world is because I think my body is very important. But if I'm not the body, then what do I have to be proud about? Even Prabhupada in his humility, and to instruct us at the end of his manifest his pastimes here in the material world, he's saying, I'm reduced to simply bones. He said, but this is Krishna's plan to make me humble, because if you're just bones, then what do you have to be proud about? So similarly, we think, well, I have some quality. I am very intelligent. I am very beautiful. I look at myself in the mirror, I become enlivened. When I hear myself speak, I think, how is it possible I can say so many wonderful words? And we pride ourselves in our accomplishments, or even as devotees, sometimes we say, I've made so many devotees. I put in so much work into the movement. And I distributed so many books. So this, I am this body, and I am doing so many things, and I deserve so much credit and recognition. Ishvaraham aham bhogi siddham bhalavan sukhi. But of course, this is all due to illusion, because if I'm not the body and I'm not the doer, then I have nothing to be proud of. But the conditioned soul has come here to be falsely proud and puffed up, so it is very difficult for him to accept his actual position as a 1/10,000th size of a Tipahara spirit soul, who's the same as everyone else, and who's completely dependent upon Krishna. But here, in this particular verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna's glories are being delineated. Of course, it is a little difficult for the conditioned soul to swallow this information, to accept it. Therefore, it is much easier to say, this is mythology. That the Hindus, they had some mythological god who lies down and periodically everything comes into him and goes out of him. So this is a nice story, and you can tell it to your children at night, and maybe they'll sleep better. But due to our investigation, we've discovered so many bones lying in the ground, and we've come to the conclusion, on the basis of so many chicken bones we found lying on the ground, that this is all mythology. But if you ask them, what is your explanation? They say, from nothing, everything is coming, or nearly nothing. We've examined this nearly nothing. We've written hundreds of thousands of pages of mathematical equations describing what this nearly nothing is. So if it's nearly nothing, then why do you have to take so many thousands of mathematical formulas to describe it? If it's nearly nothing, there must be something. Just like if someone wrote a book about you, describing you with thousands of pages, and after describing about you, so many descriptions about you in thousands of pages, the final conclusion is, well, this person is nearly nothing. It would be simply an insult. So, in the same way, they can see there's so much material manifestation, so many varieties. It must come from something which has at least equally amount of variety within this. In other words, the source has to be equally variegated as its manifestation. For instance, if we've explained this before, that each one of us has a father and mother. It is not that anyone can say they've come about spontaneously. And our father and mother had a father and mother, and their father and mother had a father and mother. So we must conclude that there must be original father and mother. So we may trace it back far enough. We say that the original father is Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and the original child is Lord Brahma, the most intelligent person. He manifests so much variety. So the scientists, they'll trace back our father, mother, father, mother, father, mother, and they'll come to the conclusion that there is some ancestor of a monkey. That if you examine your family tree far enough, my great-great-great-grandfather was almost a monkey. And if you trace back the monkey's ancestry far enough, you'll conclude somehow or another along the line, one of his ancestors was a rabbit or a mouse, depending how exalted or less exalted he was. And finally, if you trace it back far enough, you'll find out that his great-great-great-grandfather was a rock or a pebble. So this is the conclusion that, as we explained before, the two rocks, they met each other, they fell in love. Somehow or another, some mouse came. By some chance, he gave one of his future descendants gave birth to a monkey, who later on became our great-great-great-grandfather, and here we are now. So this type of logic is actually not logic, it's simply foolishness. It is mythology, actually. It is simply some bad dream of some scientist. He probably had a fight with his wife, and he went to sleep and dreamt this all up. And because people are brainwashed, they go to school and they hear these things, and then they accept it blindly, with blind faith. And if someone presents another argument that the original source has all the qualities and more qualities than all its manifestations, then the people say, "Oh, this is not very logical. It's not logical that the sun has heat and light, because the sunlight has heat and light. Therefore, we must conclude that the energetic source also must have heat and light." "Oh, this is not very logical," they'll say. But of course, it is the only logical thing. It is only logical that if the material world is created with the sun rising its appointed time, setting its appointed time, and it's going on for millions of years, then we must conclude by logic that the original creator of this material world must have intelligence, because we can see that from our little experience that anything that's been manifested or created or constructed in an organized, logical way for some purpose, then that creator has intelligence, or that is a symptom of intelligence, and behind that intelligence is a person. But because people are prejudiced, because they're conditioned, they've been brainwashed not to accept these things, therefore they refuse to accept it. From what I understand, that Sir Isaac Newton, one of the original so-called scientists, he wanted to show or examine the possibilities of explaining the universe without including God. Therefore, his followers, they're also will accept anything, but they won't accept God. That is the last thing that they want to accept. They refuse to accept it, although it is the most obvious logical conclusion, but they won't accept it. And therefore, those who have been trained up under such personalities, they're also will accept any nonsense formula or idea about how creation has come about, but they will not accept the conception of God. Even the Catholic Church, they are also accepting this nonsensical idea that everything is practically coming from nothing, called the Big Bang Theory. Of course, there may be Krishna is creating, but not in the way that the scientists are understanding. So here, Krishna's glories are being explained, and the idea is that we can become a little humble. Of course, in the spiritual world, Krishna, he's enjoying intimate pastimes with his devotees, and they don't have to consider these things because they're surrendered to Krishna due to pure love. But in the material world, everyone is puffed up, and the symptom of this being puffed up due to pride is that everyone is claiming that this is mine, that this is my body, that these things connected to my body are mine. And as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, they've divided up the land according to their mental concoction, their mental conception of what is that, this is mine. And they're thinking, oh, this is Holland, this is Belgium. And on the basis of that, they fight with each other. They fight and they make alliances that, although I hate you, but because somehow or another your body looks similar to mine, it was born in the same place, therefore we temporarily make an alliance and we cut this other person's throat, and after we get done cutting his throat, I'll try and cut yours and you'll try and cut mine. For instance, nowadays there's a lot of discussions about how in Yugoslavia, or I think it's called Bosnia, is that right? Some place. What is that right? How do you pronounce that? There's another word, Bosnia, Hera, or something. Yeah, so there the Muslims are fighting against the Serbs, and the Croatians are fighting against the Serbs. Everyone is fighting with each other. So it appears a great war. But if you go to New York City, there's also a war taking place. So many people are dying every day, being shot. But because it is a war going on. It is equally people, if you die in one place, you die in another. Due to this conflict, it is the same thing. So the conflict may be because of different countries or different religions, or maybe due to different races, or because you were born in a different house than I was. And in America, one time I saw in one magazine, it explained that generally there are something like 500 murders every week in America. That's due to people shooting each other. And most of them are relations. The husband shoots the wife, the wife shoots the husband, or the child shoots both of them. One woman I heard about, her child was crying, so she suffocated it. And she was brought before the judge, and the judge said, she explained her case, that the thing wouldn't stop crying and I couldn't go to sleep at night, so I had to suffocate it. So the judge says, yes, sleep is very important, so we pardon you. And then somehow or another, she had another child and she killed that one too. But this one, he sent it to jail for a few years. So this is the material concept of life. Due to illusion, people think that this is mine, I can do whatever I want with it, and they fight with each other to keep their possessions. Moha, jita, sangha, dosha. This is all due to false association. And everyone's encouraging each other to stay in this illusion. Your mother says, how can you give up your religion? How can you give up your house, your tradition, your family? You don't love us. And all society is trying to encourage us, identify yourself with this body, work hard, get something, make something yourself, collect things, And that way you'll become happy and you'll make us proud. But this is all jita sangha dosha. This is all due to faulty association, which is a product of illusion. Adhyatma nitya vinivritta kama. And because of that, one is overcome by lust to enjoy in the material world. Therefore, one has to get out of this conception by trying to understand the eternal. So the beginning of understanding the eternal is to understand that we're not material, we're spiritual, and that there's a supreme spiritual personality who actually owns everything here. As Eka Chakraprabhu was telling us yesterday, that sometimes the police would come up to disturb the devotees, and the devotees would say about selling books, trying to make some point how the devotees are selling books. And the devotees would simply preach to the police here that actually, you know, you can have a book, that these books explain how everything is owned by God and that you're also a servant of God. And therefore, you should also take a book. You should also read the book and surrender to God, become a devotee of God. So when they hear this, they become very disturbed and they want to flee. Just like Arjuna said, the demons are afraid and they flee here and there. Because they cannot, just to hear it is so agitating to their minds, just to hear this conception that actually their duty is to surrender to the Supreme Lord because he owns everything. Therefore they have to flee away to avoid hearing this philosophy because they're afraid they may actually have to accept it. So this is the material world. People want to avoid hearing these things. And if they do hear it, they want to hear it in such a way so they can reject it easily, that it's mythology, it's not true, don't worry about it. You don't have to surrender to God. Surrender to your mind, surrender to your senses, but not to God. Or surrender to someone else's senses and mind and become a humble servant of theirs. So people don't want to accept this because this is due to bad training. They won't accept the Bhagavatam as an authority, but they'll accept some so-called authority who himself is miserable and anxiety. He himself is subjected to so many different problems, but he presents himself as an authority. And others who are also equally bewildered like he is, they also glorify him. Swavid vrahostra karaya samstuta purusha pashu nayat karna patiopeta jatu karma vrja gadavritaha. So that those who are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, they glorify some other big animal who will never glorify the Supreme Lord. So here, we're hearing about how great Krishna is, for so many universes are coming from him, how he's unlimited, ananta. So it is not very easy for us to accept these things, to take it seriously, to consider that actually we have nothing to gain here in the material world, we have nothing to lose, that everything here belongs to Krishna eternally, and that we ourselves are not this body. So many things to actually accept this philosophy means to accept so many things that are not very palatable for the conditioned soul. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Trinadapi sunichena. Because one has to become humble, to accept this philosophy means to accept actually to become humble. That we are insignificant, but everyone wants to become significant. As a matter of fact, everyone's in anxiety because generally speaking, everyone feels himself insignificant and they have some plan to become significant in the material world. Therefore, after saying, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after saying, I want to become humble like a blade of grass, tolerant like a tree, then he says, Na danam na janam na sundarim kaivitam va jagadisha kamaye. So this is the plan, how to become significant, so-called significant. Collect money, collect followers, collect so-called admirers, and if it all, you can't do that, then merge into Brahman and become God there. Somehow or another, find your space, either become a big fish in a big ocean, or become a big fish, the biggest fish in a little pond. But somehow or another, find your place and become satisfied by becoming the Lord. Get a house, become the king there. Surround yourself with so many little expansions, the goddess of fortune, so many potencies, your electric toaster, the desire tree of your refrigerator. Where you can simply manifest so many varieties of enjoyable things in 30 seconds or less. So people want to imagine that they're actually, somehow or another, they have their place. They're the king in this little house, and everything else is more or less there to serve them. Unfortunately, no one's very happy in that state because the wife is trying to become the king, the husband's trying to become the king, the children are trying to become the king, everyone is competing with each other to become the lord of the house, trying to control each other, and they wind up hitting each other on the head. Therefore, if we can accept ourselves as servants of Krishna, then, as it says, that if one tries to come to this platform, Gyane Priyasa Mudapasana Manta Eva, Jivanti Sanmukaritam Bhavatiyam Varatam, Stane stita shutigatam tanuvangmano bir jane priyasa jita jitopi tais trilokyam. That if one actually tries to become the servant of Krishna and gives up all this mental speculation about how great we are and how I have my plan to becoming great, how I'll get so many followers, I'll get so much wealth, I'll collect it all together, and then I can feel myself very proud and puffed up. I'll have some reason to think myself very important. So if one can give this up, including Gyane Priyasa, including the idea of becoming God and the Brahman effulgence, put this far aside and hear this philosophy from the devotees, and not that one has to change his position or change what he's doing, but simply hear and accept it in a practical way by using one's body, mind, and words in Krishna's service, then the result is that even the greatest personality of all, Krishna, will become surrendered to one. That this philosophy is so nice that if one tries to become God in the material world, it explains, then he becomes less than a dog. And if he tries to become a servant of God, then he becomes even greater than God. As one great devotee was praying, that why should I worship Krishna? Better I worship Nanda Maharaj, because Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is crawling in his yard just like a little child. Therefore, this philosophy is so nice that if one becomes a devotee of God, then God becomes one's devotee, and therefore, in one sense, one can even become greater than God. So why should we try to become God? Better to become greater than God. Of course, that's due to love. It's not that loving affection makes one, Krishna surrenders to one who has love for him. So this is a philosophy of developing love for Krishna. But unless we understand Krishna in a practical way, who we're actually dealing with, it is very difficult to overcome our false prestige and our false pride, which is actually why we're in the material world in the first place. Therefore, we should not jump and hear about Krishna's intimate pastimes with the gopis in Vrindavan, because it's assured we'll misunderstand Krishna and his relationships with his devotees, because first we have to become a devotee of Krishna, and before that, we also have to overcome this false prestige and false pride and illusion, which causes us to misidentify ourselves with this body, and therefore be actually, in the practical sense, be a devotee of our bodies and our misconceptions. So here it explains something about Krishna's greatness to help us overcome our false prestige and our illusions, and understand who we're actually dealing with. that Krishna, who's even on the altar, from his kala, his partial plenary expansion, is coming so many universes, unlimited in size and extent and number, inconceivable. Therefore, one should at least, in the beginning, respect Krishna, not that here is a stone statue, you know, what can he do from it? Maybe he is God, so we'll take a chance and we'll drop a dollar and a quarter in the little box there, pray hard and hope it becomes a million. If not, we haven't lost too much. But I've heard stories, rumors, how somehow or another this stone statue converts dollars and quarters into millions, so we'll try it out. But no, actually, the purpose of coming to the temple, serving Krishna, is to develop the proper consciousness. And if we develop the proper consciousness, then Krishna will reveal himself and we'll actually see here is Krishna. That Krishna is so great, he's so unlimited, that although he's so unlimited that he can manifest himself in his personal form, either in the hearts of his devotees or even as the deity in the temple, he can manifest himself in unlimited ways, Krishna, and relate personally. As Krishna is unlimitedly great, so he's unlimitedly nice, he's unlimitedly personal, and therefore the devotees worship him, not because he's a great, strong personality with so many potencies. They worship him because he's the most loving personality, and therefore that's what actually attracts them. Just like if your father is a policeman and he comes into your room and puts a gun to your head and says, "Love me, or else you're finished." You say, "Well, I'll think about it real carefully." But that type of personality does not inspire so much love. But even if your father is a policeman, if he deals with you in a very loving way, then naturally you become attracted to him. So Krishna attracts his devotees not due to his potencies, but due to his loving exchanges with his devotees. But still, we came to the material world to imitate him, so we should not be envious of him. And so we should understand his greatness at the beginning. And we understand how great Krishna is when we become a little humble. Then there's some possibility of developing some more intimate relationship with him based on love. So we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Well, hopefully we'll make a couple of less plans. Well, this is the nature of it. It's not that we hear one class or we hear 10 classes and suddenly everything becomes enlightened and Krishna surrenders to me and my life becomes perfect. But gradually we hear and then we accept a little bit, then there's some progress. The Maya is always telling us, don't try so hard because I'm so powerful, you'll never get out of my clutches anyhow. So you're just wasting your time. Why don't you just become submissive and surrender to me? And you will, at least, even if I knock you around in the material world, put you in anxiety, but at least you won't have to worry about it because at least you've surrendered and accepted it. So we shouldn't become discouraged. Because yoga is chalati manasa, Maya is always trying to defeat the practitioner by so many allurements, always trying to discourage us from making progress. But the fact is that by hearing, we do make progress and we do get out of the clutches of Maya. Maybe not completely, but enough. And therefore, but Maya will always tell us, don't hear so hard because you're wasting your time. You've been here since time immemorial. And as far as I'm concerned, you might as well stay here time immemorial from now. But we shouldn't become discouraged. Because if we've understood something, then it's permanent. As Prabhupada once wrote to me, he said, if you light a match in a dark room, the darkness won't put the match out. Yes. Well, because we'd be very discouraged if we found out it was some really small fraction. Than a quarter? Well, because this material world has its limitation, but the spiritual world has no limitation. But even if we say it's a quarter, still the material world is so vast in our perspective that it's beyond our comprehension. Anyhow, we're not the quarter. Even if the material cosmic manifestation is a quarter, they couldn't even describe the fraction that we are. It's like sometimes, you know, you may be nothing, but your football team, your soccer team, you know, they're the champions. So you think, well, I'm a fan, so I'm practically like the champion myself. So we may be losers, but you know, we're still a quarter at least. We're not the cosmic manifestation either. Yeah.
This feeling of insignificance can be also realized in the wrong way, because you might lose a sense of responsibility, or you might mistreat others because you know you're insignificant and you're too young.
Yeah.
This feeling of insignificance can be also realized in the wrong way, because you might lose a sense of responsibility, or you might mistreat others because you know you're insignificant and you're too young.
Yeah, we're not. This, our philosophy is achintya beta beta tattva. So, in one sense, we're insignificant. We ourselves are personally insignificant, but we should understand that everything else is significant because it has a relationship with Krishna. Therefore, it's just as good as Krishna. So, it's good to think ourselves to be insignificant. But as Jiva Goswami said, and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, right, that one who worships the deity in the temple but does not understand how the deity is within all living entities' hearts and therefore respects all living entities as the temple of Vishnu, that his worship in the temple is a useless waste of time. So all living entities, accompanying them is Vishnu, and all this is Vishnu's energy. Therefore, in understanding how insignificant we are, part of it is we find out how significant Krishna is and everything else in relationship to him. That everything for the devotee is Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Everything's working under Vishnu, Krishna's direction. Therefore, everything is as good as Krishna to the devotee. Therefore, the actual devotee, an advanced devotee, he thinks himself most insignificant, but he thinks everything else is very significant. Therefore, he respects everyone and everything is in relation to Krishna. Yes. Well, unless one becomes a devotee of the devotees, there's no question of even awareness of Krishna, what to speak of love for him. Krishna reveals himself in proportion to one's service attitude developed towards the other devotees. Because that's Krishna's desire. If we want to become Krishna's Krishna, his only business is to serve the devotees. Therefore, if we want to serve Krishna, we must serve the other devotees. Otherwise, there's no question of service to Krishna. Just like one time, one temple president in Delhi, he wasn't giving the devotees very nice prasadam. So when Prabhupada came, the devotees complained to Prabhupada about the treatment they were receiving from the temple president, and Prabhupada talked to him and chastised him. But the temple president said, "Prabhupada, I was just doing this to save you money in your service." And Prabhupada said, "Do you think it is my service that the devotees are unhappy?" Therefore, we become Krishna's servant in proportion to our becoming servants to Krishna's servants. Gopi Bharatu Parakamalayor Dasa Dasa Anodasa. Whereas Prabhupada once wrote to me, he said that I've heard in New York that in just 2 weeks they've distributed 3,000 Bhakti Godheads, and that in Buffalo you were also distributing Bhakti Godhead very nicely. So please continue in this way and your success in life is assured. As Krishna sees that you are working hard to bring his other children back to the spiritual kingdom, then he'll bestow all his blessings upon you. That Krishna is never ungrateful to our efforts to serve him, rest assured. So that's Krishna's service, is to serve his devotees, not the devotees in the temple and the innocent people outside the temple. Yes.
I hear it many times lately that some people say, even devotees say, "Well, you know, you are a Krishna, so you're always preaching about, you know, how little you are and how you know, you have no one strength." And I said, "But that creates frustration because then you feel yourself very insignificant."
No, we preach about how great Krishna is. Therefore, by preaching about how great Krishna is, we come in contact with Krishna. And we become enlivened in such association. You're also preaching how great your politicians are. You're always glorifying. Even you're criticizing them, you're condemning them, but you're always thinking about them. How great your leaders were, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln. You're always preaching all day long. You're reading about all these so-called great personalities. So you're also worshiping someone. And if not, then you think about how great you are. But how great are you, really? So we also worship the great, but we worship the great. And by worshiping the great, we actually become, that's how we become significant. By worshiping Krishna, by coming in contact with Krishna, we become enlivened. You're thinking about all these mundane personalities and you're becoming depressed. But as far as how great we are, that's how great is that? We're understanding because we love Krishna, because we see how great he is in comparison to him. We think ourselves very insignificant. And because we love Krishna and we see everyone else and everything else in relationship to him, therefore we're not in anxiety about our false ego and prestige. We have nothing to worry about. And because we show respect to others, therefore they also, those who are sane, they show respect to us. But you don't respect anyone, so no one really respects you. So such people who condemn us for being humble, they condemn everyone else also. Therefore, they don't show us respect, so why should we show them any respect? Their ideas. Who's to say your standard is the correct standard? Because we can see in society, everyone is puffed up, thinking themselves great, and they're all miserable, fighting with each other to become greater. That the biggest animal can kill all the other animals, he's considering himself great. But what is his value? He's simply an animal. a violent animal. On the other hand, serving Krishna, we try to make others happy. So which is more valuable? Trying to make others happy or being a big animal and causing all other living entities suffering? Yes. Well, if we're actually in Vrindavan, remembering Krishna's loving exchanges with his devotees, there's no question of loving exchanges with others because everything becomes Vrindavan. But the problem is that we're not on that always on that level. Therefore, we're just like she is now. So the problem is not that we're in Vrindavan, it's that we have the same mentality as she has. We're still afflicted by our past habits and ideas. And because we live in that platform, therefore, as she said, we don't have loving exchanges or loving relationships. So it's not that when she left the Association of Devotees, now she has loving relationships with everyone. If she has loving relationships with everyone, it's probably more like lusty relationships with everyone. But that's not... In other words, our problem is not devotional service, but it's our lack of devotional service.
Yeah, and she said, therefore, why don't you be honest? And because you have such high philosophy, but you cannot live it anyway, so better, you know, be honest.
I mean, she can't live.
But she says...
She can't say everyone can't live. Who is she to say? Has she become God, the all omnipresent, omniscient God who says what everyone can do, what they can't do? How dare you tell me that? Do you know who you're dealing with? Look, if I can't do it, no one can do it. Give me one good example. Well, he's an example. I don't believe it. No, it's difficult. It's not so easy or cheap to become a devotee. But it is possible. Therefore, we're at least our life is full, has some hope in it. Your life is hopeless. And even if we don't become pure devotees, still, we're eating the best food. We're seeing the most beautiful personalities. We have the best philosophy. We don't have to work like a dog like you do. And even when we work hard, still we become more blissful. So we have the best deal. Even if Krishna isn't God, even if we're so-called wasting our time, still we have the best deal. You're wasting your time, you're going to hell. You're already in hell. So we should become like you? That's right. Except the earth. Well, you dig into the earth. First of all, Krishna didn't put us on the earth. We put ourselves here. People like you who want to stay here, well, good, stay here. Dig in. Get a good mouthful of it. But we understand we have a responsibility, we have free will, we can utilize it, we can learn how to utilize it properly. We're practicing to utilize our free will properly. Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you about this fault finding that we have in our attitudes. This is a thing that we sometimes have. Prabhupada, he said that your qualification of Vaishnava is that he's a Dorsa Darsi, that he doesn't have that fault finding mentality.
Well, we're trying to develop that. It's not that, you know, someone's walking and he's about to walk over the cliff and we don't want to say anything because we don't find fault in what he's doing. You know, there must be some good reason why he's killing himself like that. I don't want to interfere. Prabhupada said that in the beginning we see all fault. We come to the moon, that's all we see is fault. What everyone's doing is wrong, except for me. But well, as we make more advancement, we see equally people's good qualities and their bad qualities. And then when we make more advancement, we see more of their good qualities and less their bad qualities. When we make more advancement, we see practically only their good qualities. So it takes training, but we shouldn't artificially jump to first class stage. In this stage, we're preachers. We're trying to become preachers. So we're trying to see how the devotees are good, what they're doing, and not take so much into account what they're doing that's wrong. And we're trying to see the innocent, and we're trying to encourage them to take up the good qualities. And we see the envious, and we don't waste our time. So we have to discriminate. Not that we think, well, he's a demon, but he's not such a bad demon. He has some good qualities too. He has a nice smile and he's dressed nicely. No, he's a demon. We reject him. We don't want to associate with him. Because he doesn't love Krishna and he's doing everything wrong because of that. He doesn't want to follow Krishna's instructions. And the innocent, we try to see their good qualities, whatever good quality, and engage in Krishna's service. And for the devotees, we try not to see their faults, but try to appreciate their good qualities. And Krishna, we just try and love Krishna. Although he's a thief, and he's a woman hunter, and he's doing so many things like that, still we don't mind. We love Krishna, whatever he does. But others, they'll say, look, they'll criticize, look, this man is a sannyasi. He has so many disciples, and secretly at night he's eating sweets because the ants are crawling here and there. And even some people claim he's God. Yeah, it's not my fault. I left ISKCON. It had nothing to do with me. It was all them. Although I'm engaged in illicit sex now, I'm eating meat, taking intoxication, but it had nothing to do with me. It was those bad people in ISKCON. They caused the whole thing. Because they didn't love me and recognize how great I am. They forced me to take intoxication and engage in sinful activities. So that's everyone's doing. It's not just ISKCON. Everyone criticizes everyone in the material world. Prabhupada, one day, a devotee was talking to another devotee and says, "Prabhupada, you know, I've been trying to preach to these people, but all they do is criticize all my faults." And Prabhupada said, "They criticize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." And the devotee said, "But Prabhupada, you know, he didn't quite understand what Prabhupada was talking about." And he said, "But Prabhupada, you know, I'm such a rascal, I do so many things wrong, but I'm trying to preach, but I can't do anything." And I said, and Prabhupada said again, "They criticize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." And again, the devotee was trying to explain to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, "In this material world, everyone is critical. Even God himself comes, people find fault. So we shouldn't take it so seriously. Of course, we can take it seriously in one sense, we should try and improve ourselves. But we should understand that people are envious, therefore they'll always criticize. Therefore, they criticize ISKCON. It's just like you go to a hospital, and there are so many patients there that are trying to get better, and the person's going, look at this, so many sick people are here. You know, why are they wasting their time trying to get better here? Better they leave the hospital and die. So it's a hospital, there'll be some, you know, there's some problems in the hospital. But at least there's some possibility of getting well if you go there. Better than going outside and just dying. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Jai.